Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. It is the night before America decides to go fascist. Yee-haw! We're going to ride this horse, aren't we, huh? We're going to get rid of that health care thingy. We're going to put the queers back in the closet. We're going to kill a bunch of Muslims. We're going to invade anybody we want to. We're going to keep those taxes off rich people. We're going to make sure unions can't steal any more elections. By God, a new day is dawning. Yee-haw! Right? There are a number of things the public knows, quote, quote, as we head into tomorrow's bloodletting. We're going to get that son of a bitch that are just false. And if people elect leaders based on false information, the things those leaders can do in office will not really be what the public expects or needs. Just remember something, okay? Butchering and paraphrasing Mr. Voltaire, anyone who has the power to make you believe absurdities has the power to make you commit atrocities. Just remember that. Okay? Okay. Yeah, we don't like Obama. He still runs the torture camp, and he still has power to spy on us. So we're going to get, we Democrats, we liberals, we've had enough of this phony. Right? Can't vote him out. So, by God, we Democrats are going to stay home tomorrow. We're not going to vote. Because we know that if America gets a taste of 2 years of these crazed Republicans, it'll be enough to finally put a stake in the bastards' hearts. That's what we know, right? Yeah, but we might be wrong. Because politics has turned into a zero-sum game. The Republicans have made it clear that there's no compromise on anything. Not during these first 2 years of Obama's presidency, and certainly not during the coming 2 years, and certainly not into the foreseeable future. No compromise. You've heard Mike Pence say it. You've heard that crazy white-haired bastard from Texas say it. You've heard Mitch McConnell say it, and they mean it. That's one thing you can count on, Republicans. They absolutely mean it when they say, we are dumbasses and we're not going to cooperate. No how, no way, not ever. You can take that to the bank. Dave Johnson at Institute for America's Future has put together a couple things here. Here are the 8 biggest myths that are out there as we get rid of these winky-tink Democrats and bring in some real men and some, by God, red-blooded women. Yee-haw! 1. President Obama tripled the deficit. The truth? Bush's last budget had a $1.4 trillion dollar deficit. Obama's first budget reduced that to $1.2 trillion. 2. President Obama raised taxes, which hurt the economy. Fact, Obama cut taxes for 95% of Americans. 40% of the stimulus was wasted on tax cuts, which only create debt, which is why it was so much less effective than it could have been, Obama's stimulus. 3. President Obama bailed out the banks. The truth. Well, many people conflate the stimulus with the bank bailouts. The bank bailouts were requested by Bush and his Treasury Secretary, former Goldman Sachs CEO Henry Paulson. The bailouts passed and began before the 2008 election of Obama. Four, the stimulus didn't work. The truth? The stimulus worked, but it was not enough. In fact, according to the Congressional Budget Office, the stimulus raised employment by between 1.4 and 3.3 million jobs. Five, businesses will hire if they get tax cuts. The truth? A business hires the right number of employees to meet demand. Having extra cash through a tax cut does not cause a business to hire. But a business that has a demand for what it does will find the money to hire. Businesses want customers, not tax cuts. Six. Healthcare reform costs $1 trillion. The truth. The healthcare reform reduces government deficits by $138 billion. Number seven, Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. It's growing broke. We need to get it into the stock market. People live longer, fewer workers per retiree, and you know. Truth, Social Security has run a surplus since it began, has a trust fund in the trillions, is completely sound for at least 25 more years, and cannot legally borrow, so cannot contribute to the deficit. You want to compare that to the military budget? Life expectancy is only longer because fewer babies die. People who reach age 65 live about the same number of years as they used to. The catch is living to 65. You know, vaccinations, penicillin, antibiotics, surgeries, life-saving equipment. Number eight, government spending takes money out of the economy. The truth? Government is we the people, and money it spends is on we the people. Many people do not know that it is government that builds the roads, airports, ports, courts, schools, and other things that are in the soil in which business thrives. Many people think that all government spending is on welfare and foreign aid, when that's only a small part of the government's budget. Now, it really matters to have these facts. There's not a teabag or a Republican out there. There's nobody on Fox News who would dare tell the truth. But it's important that people have the facts for a very simple reason. So that when you go in to vote and you vote for the Republican, you know what you're doing. Son of a bitch, just know what you're doing. You are voting. I'm not saying vote for the Democrat. I'm not. Stay your ass at home. Do anything you want to do. But if you vote for the Republican, just remember what you are bringing down on yourself, you moron. And if you decide that you want the good old years of the Bush crime family and much, much worse, do it. If you want this tea-colored John Boehner to be the Speaker of the House, do it! Oh, he'll be so much more effective than Nancy Pelosi, won't he? Huh? If you want Mitch McConnell to be the Senate Majority Leader, do it! He'll get so much more done, won't he, than Harry Reid. He'll find you a job, won't he? He'll restore America's dignity, won't he? Huh? Sure he will. So, it's up to you, truth seeker. You want a return to the Bush years? By God, you're only 24 hours away from it. So go for it. Do it. Bring him back. Come on. Yee-haw! I feel my pipe to the mark, to the far away road.
not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Hundreds of millions of dollars, over a billion, is it close to 2 billion? The amount of money spent on these midterm elections, apparently it is without doubt the highest amount ever spent on midterm elections. It may exceed last year's presidential election. Why do you suppose that the right wing has spent so much? There's got to be a reason. Is it because they believe in good government? Is it because they believe in the voice of the people prevailing? Is it because they believe that Republicans can offer the country more of what is needed to repair this slowly dying society? Why all this money? Who benefits from all this money being spent? Television stations, television networks, oh yeah, cable and broadcast. The biggest political expenditure for these candidates is television commercials, right? Huh? Haven't you just had your goddamn belly full of these things? Isn't your head ready to explode? Don't you feel like your hair is on fire? Don't you want to just take an ice pick and jam it into both your ears? Huh? From these, and the networks and the cable channels lament, the quality of the ads. Ooh! My goodness, these television, the talking heads on Sunday or whenever, and they get together on the cable shows, and they say, oh, this is just awful. Oh, I can't believe this. You see what this one said about that one, and that one said about this one. They whine and complain about it. But they'd never admit that the ads are filled with lies and distortions. They don't say that. And when you watch these commercials, what conclusion would someone who's not familiar with our dying form of government, what conclusion would they come to? Well, the first one that pops into mind, that those who run for political office, local or national, are the worst dregs of our sad, tired society. They're all liars, deceivers, perverts, supporters of all sorts of vile activity, right? Right? Look at the ads. Oh my God! If you vote for this man, you're voting for your own mother to have her throat cut and your children eviscerated at high noon downtown your town. Because that's what this bastard I'm running against likes to see. He's a liar, a pervert, a murderer, a sneak, a thief. He raped his own mother. He believes in satanic worship of upside-down goat heads. And you're going to vote for him? Ooh, no. Vote for me. Hi. My name is Johnny Sunshine. Vote for me. I'm going to make sure you have a job. I'm going to make sure your mama really is okay. I'm going to destroy the goat head worshiper. Eee! How does it stop? When does that garbage end? When these greedy, filthy, amoral television stations say no to the money. No. You know, the Christians always wonder how their precious little holiday that celebrates the birth of their precious little Savior got so turned into nothing but commercial slop. How did that happen? Because the Christians let it happen. And the Christians now are screaming, don't call it a holiday sale! Sell those snow blowers and that cheap crap made from China in the name of Jesus Christ! It's the Savior's birthday. Don't you dare say holiday sale. And how did our political system get so perverted? Same way. The money. And I'm not talking about the campaign money. That's bad enough. But the greedy, amoral, filthy, putrid television stations and networks that take this stuff and air it. Oh, Mikey, what about First Amendment rights of free speech? Television stations are not the government. Television stations can say no to anything they want to say no to. They are private businesses. You know, like Rand Paul says, he would not have voted for the Civil Rights Act because a private business has a right to say no! television station has a right to say no also. But let's suppose then they all got together, huh? All the executives say, you know, why are we destroying the system? It's the money. We like the money. When the greedy, amoral television stations say no to the money, then this garbage will stop. When they finally say, no, we're not running any more political ads. Because all of you are lying sons of bitches. You want to reach the public? Take out newspaper ads. Go door to door. Print out flyers. But you're not going to go on television ever again because you can't be trusted. When will that happen? That'll be on the same day that hell becomes a vacation destination. That's when the television stations will say no. Before the hour, regarding the rally for sanity and or fear, and the Jon Stewart Colbert event on the weekend, I watched some of it. I was surprised C-SPAN 2 carried wall-to-wall coverage. You know, they won't cover wall-to-wall events like important congressional hearings, but by God, they covered that wall-to-wall, didn't they? I thought it was very entertaining. I thought it was great. It kind of reminded me of this country in the mythical imagination that I have about it, the mythical images I have of this country. You know, a lot of people out on a real beautiful fall day, watching good entertainment, listening to good, funny stuff, people hanging out. My favorite sign was the one, somebody held a great big yellow sign that said, God hates figs, which was just so... Oh, man, there were so many really cool signs there and people having a good time. And, of course, then the big argument begins. Well, how many people? Well, he didn't have as many as Glenn Beck. Yes, he did. No, he didn't. He didn't have nearly as many as Glenn Beck. He did, too. No, he did. Yes, he did. Ah! Well, the Associated Press came up with this. The Washington Metro, the Metro Rail, you know, the rapid transit in D.C., and it says, Metro says preliminary figures show Metro Rail moved a record number of passengers on Saturday, with many heading to the National Mall for a rally by Stewart and Colbert. Metro says 825,437 Metro Rail trips were taken on Saturday, compared to an average Saturday ridership of about 350,000. So the difference there is a little over 400,000. Metro says Saturday's ridership surpassed the 1991 Desert Storm Rally when 786,358 trips were taken. Now, by comparison, they estimated there were 200,000 extra riders for the Beck Hate Fest. So, you know, you take as many grains of salt as you want to. Nobody estimates crowds anymore because they get too much flack, but you cannot argue with computer printouts of how many people rode the goddamn Metro Rail. You can't argue with it. There it is, you teabag freakoids.
that care about that. Oh, well, we had more than they did. We had Christians. All they had was, the Sarducci, whatever his name is. Father Sargoop, I don't know.
Well, you can bite my ass on this one, right-wingers. The numbers are the numbers. You don't like it? Go talk to Metrorail. Probably run by a bunch of left-wing Kenyan communists anyway, that whole rail system. If they were good Americans, they would be tearing up that rail system and build some more roads! Mass transit my ass, communists. Little more violence for you. This one's not quite as bad. Alan West, the Florida Republican teabag freak bastard. Recently, he's had to deny that he's associated with the Outlaws motorcycle gang. The Outlaws is to the Hell's Angels what, we had the Inferno last week. So the Outlaws are to the Hell's Angels what Virgil was to Dante. There, how's that? You think about it. You just mull it over. The Outlaws have always been Hell's Angel wannabe. You know, they'll never come close to the murder record of the Angels. The Outlaws are real good at methamphetamine production, though. They probably run more meth labs in the poor, miserable, dirty, filthy state of Florida than there are roadside alligator pits. I mean, you know, there are meth labs all over down there, and most of them are run by the Outlaws. Well, anyway, they have kind of assigned themselves, much the way Blackwater, former Blackwater employees have assigned themselves to Joe Miller. The Outlaws have assigned themselves to Florida Republican Alan West. Now, at a rally on over the weekend, was it over the weekend? No, this was thehill.com reported this. This was a few days ago. A Democratic tracker, someone who was taking notes, going to a public rally and, you know, taking notes. He was ejected from a campaign event by a bunch of outlaws. There's a video up. You can go to thehill.com and you'll find it. On the video, West is heard saying,
"Man, I don't want you here because this is a place of honor and the organization that you represent has no honor, so leave."
The young staffer asked several men around him, "Do you really want to do this?" The group then forces the tracker back to his car. One man says to the tracker during the incident, "Somebody's going to hurt him. You're going to get hurt, boy." The West campaign told NBC Miami that he was an event to honor American veterans, and the young man was asked to leave. West is challenging Representative Ron Klein, who's a Democrat in that particular district. The outlaw motorcycle gang, murderers, killers, they are too stupid to be Hell's Angels. They are too cowardly in the sense that motorcycle gangs use that word. And if you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. If you don't, you don't. But they're too cowardly to be Hell's Angels. But they will show up at a campaign event billed as, "Well, they were trying to here show honor to veterans." No, you weren't, you lying son of a bitch, Alan West. You're there to look for votes, and it's a public campaign on public property. So the brown shirts, they're all over the place. They're just different, you know, different outfits right now. But eventually they will trade all of these, you know, the biker outfits, the suits with the thin black ties and the, you know, all these accoutrements of fascism, will manifest eventually. The brown shirts with the armbands, and then it will go to black shirts with no armbands. They'll just have buckles that say, "Gott mit uns." Huh? The League of Women Voters has filed complaints with police in Evanston, Illinois, and the FBI says that one of their officials has been, one of the official League of Women Voters has been targeted by death threats. relating to a candidate's debate that she moderated last week. Kathy Tate Bradish was a volunteer moderator at the October 21st debates in the state's 8th district. And she sparked conservative outrage when she expressed what was perceived as lukewarm support for reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. As the debate was about to begin, an audience member asked Ms. Tate Bradish whether the pledge would be recited. When she explained that the pledge was not scheduled to begin the event, almost all in the crowd of more than 300 stood and enthusiastically recited it anyway. She recited the pledge as well, but told the crowd afterwards that the pledge is not typically recited at candidates' debates moderated by the League of Women Voters. Within a few days, this woman went from an unknown local league official to a right-wing villain, thanks to Fox News host Glenn Beck, who devoted a significant portion of his October 25th show to attacking her personally. Here's what he said. Beck: "We wanted to look at the moderator, Kathy Tate Bradish from the League of Women Voters. Oh, she sounds so neutral and everything. I mean, she's even neutral on the pledge. Apparently just a typical woman voter trying to get the truth out. No, not so much. Not so much. She's on fire for Obama. She's a big-time Obama supporter. In fact, so much so, she's part of his Organizing for America arm. She's even hosted a campaign event in her home in 2007. Part of her post of Organizing for America." The FBI told the Arlington Heights Daily Herald that this woman complained she has received and is receiving due consideration. The complaint is: League of Women Voters Illinois Executive Director Jan Zernick, who filed the complaint, told the FBI that the woman had been, quote, turned into a cause celeb by Glenn Beck and Fox News. Ms. Zernick provided the FBI death threats posted on the Internet against Ms. Bradish and reported menacing posts on Fox News Channel's Facebook page and Beck's website, The Blaze. Joel Cheatwood, an executive overseas Beck show, issued a statement yesterday saying, quote, "We're not going to comment on something that's hypothetical, as we have not heard about this complaint," end quote. I have been on that toilet site, The Blaze. I wish they put me back. See, the other night when I begged these pissant little right-wing bloggers to put me back up. I forget what I was talking about. And they deliberately ignored me. You little sons of bitches, when I tell you to put me up on your right-wing blog sites, I mean it. You put me up on your blog sites, or I'll come over there and tear you a new body orifice. Right? Well, I'm not going to say where, but you can be damn sure it'll happen. I was thinking about something today. I made this little list of our enemies. You know, our enemies used to be communist China. That was until one of George W. Bush's uncles opened up the Chinese-American Chamber of Commerce. Ever notice how, I think I mentioned this, how members of the Bush family are always involved with some of our worst enemies, whether it's the Nazis or the Saudis or the Chinese, right? Oh, never mind. I made up this list of who our enemies are now. And, boy, we have a bunch, don't we? I mean our active enemies, the ones that we are either at war with, or we are bombing them, or we are sending drone aircraft to kill their people, or we are planning to do that, or we are providing the wherewithal for our surrogate in the Middle East to do it. And I made up the list. Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, Ethiopia, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Lebanon. And I looked at the list and I thought, oh, wait a minute. There's something very similar there with all of those. Let me see. That's right. They're all Muslim. Uh-oh. Yeah, but there's Christians in Ethiopia. There's Christians in Iraq and Iran. There's Jews in Iran. There's Jews in Iraq. There's Jews in Yemen. What do you mean they're all Christian? Or, I mean, what do you mean they're all Muslim? Well, just make up your own list and see if you come up with the same thing. These are countries that we will soon be at war with, all of them. Iran, Syria, Lebanon, Ethiopia, Yemen, and some declaration, invasion or whatever, of Pakistan, the same way we did Afghanistan and Iraq. And that's one of the blessings that the teabagger Republicans are going to bring to us. We are going to defeat these sons of bitches for once and for all with their phony God and their hatred of America. What did we ever do to them? Oh, I know. You read the stuff that we overthrew their governments and we've taken their resources and we murder their people just daily and have been doing it for over half a century. But that's just liberal hog snot. This guy who is running, the Republican running for governor of Florida, Rick Scott, he may, according to the caucus, the New York Times blog site, if he wins, if Rick Scott becomes the next governor of Florida, he could find himself in the terribly awkward position for normal people, not for a Republican, but he could find himself in a position of having to choose his own inquisitor. New documents show the complaints into the chain of clinics he ran. Yeah, he did. Ripping off Medicare and Medicaid left and right. New documents show the complaints into a chain of clinics he ran have been referred to the state health department, whose head is appointed by the governor. You know, if one mythical person wants to run for a mythical office in a mythical state, and one chooses to do that because one has defrauded the people of that state and the federal government out of billions of dollars, well, the best way to make sure there's never an investigation is to, that's right, run for governor, or at least get elected. As the New York Times, the caucus says, throughout the close race against Alex Sink, his Democratic opponent, Mr. Scott, has stressed that he was never charged with wrongdoing when the healthcare conglomerate he built, Columbia HCA, was fined with $1.7 billion for defrauding government health programs in 1997. I was never charged with it. Not me. Not me. My company, not me. Mr. Scott's campaign has also dismissed accusations about Solantic, a chain of health clinics he ran after his ouster from Columbia HCA. Among them are allegations from a former employee that Solantic overbilled Medicare and Medicaid and a government health agency for veterans, as well as prescribed unnecessary drugs for patients to buy through Solantic's internal pharmacy. Oh, no, not me. I'm a Republican. I'm running for governor. Not me. In August, the state's Agency for Healthcare Administration referred the formal complaint to Florida's Department of Health. According to documents obtained by the Naples Daily News from a public information request, what is unclear, it is unclear whether the health department is pursuing the complaint. And Mr. Scott told the Daily News on Thursday that if elected, I'll recuse myself from any involvement in any investigation of myself. I'm going to appoint the head of the position, but I'm not going to be involved in any decisions about whether myself is investigated by myself. Myself will not stand for this kind of investigation of myself. On the other hand, myself declares that myself has nothing to do with this. Absolutely nothing. Myself does not. When the Sarah Wheaton, the writer for the New York Times, the caucus, when she requested a comment from Rick Scott. All she got was the faint echo of a door slamming someplace down in Florida. Blam! And then there's rumor that she got an email signed from a motorcycle gang called the Outlaws. Tomorrow night. Remember, the 2nd of November. Tomorrow night. The hour. This is the Malloy program. Some emails here, and in just a couple of minutes, we're going to open up the lines. And I think just be patient. They're not open now, so don't even dial. Prairie 2 wants me to know I'm wrong about the TV ads. He writes, TV and radio stations cannot refuse or edit ads from any candidate on the ballot, period. This has been federal law since the 30s. Which O'Donnell is claiming they refused to run her 30-minute infomercial, but she delivered it late and they ran it when it came, as required. I should have known that, having been in broadcast for 22 years. Let me change it then. Since it is a matter of law, then let's have all the huge conglomerate media outlets, electronic media, lobby to get the law rescinded. Yeah, that'll happen. The reality is, in addition to what Prairie 2 wrote here, the other reality is as long as that law is in effect, now that the Citizens United, all one of them, has been decided in favor of corporate money, unlimited corporate money, as long as the TV and radio requirement is in effect, it is absolutely, positively, no question, the death of democracy as we know it. It's over. And get used to it. From George in Oregon, Mike, isn't it, regarding the faux news patriots, isn't it interesting that these patriots who make a big deal about the Pledge of Allegiance being recited ran the other way when it was their turn to serve? All the recruiters saw of these guys, Beck, Limbaugh, Hannity, O'Reilly, etc., were their asses and the smoke coming off their tennis shoes as they ran away. Amazing, ain't it? George in Oregon. Dave in San Francisco. Hi, Mike. The San Francisco Giants just pulled ahead of the Texas Rangers in the 7th, 3-1. Anyway, last night and tonight, the games have been in Texas. The smirking chimp, his idiot wife, and his clueless parents have been at the game, which is being broadcast by Fox. The commentators, the Fox commentators, have made some comments about the Bush crime family. The sight of them made me want to throw a brick at my television. It's so infuriating to see a war criminal sitting at the World Series with a smirk on his face. Why doesn't someone make a citizen's arrest on the son of a bitch? Honestly, all the death and destruction and disaster that his reign of terror has brought to the world, it is so unbelievable that he's a free man. How can people be so stupid as to put his party back in power tomorrow? Question asked rhetorically. The answer is fear, propagated by television, which has completely brainwashed the less intelligent among us, which is a huge number of people. This mind control has then been reinforced with right-wing talk radio. Anyway, happy election eve. We'll all look back on this day fondly as the last day before our country completely flipped toward fascism. Dave in L.A. This is from Jim in Burlingame, California. He sent this, today. Is it today? What's the day today? This is the first, right? Yeah, okay. This is what he wrote. Hi, Mike. I'm driving to work up US 101 in San Francisco Bay Area, and I have Tom Hartman's show on the radio, and his guest is giving me a combination coronary stroke and bad gas attack with a touch of epilepsy. Tom is interviewing one of these political researcher, pencil-neck Democratic geek dorks about the 2010 congressional election. What else? For the life of me, Mike, I can't understand why Tom does not throw this pissant out the window. He is moaning about all the terrible things that are going to befall the entire human race. The guest is, in addition to the rest of the poor creatures on all the planets in the solar system come Tuesday when the Reichstag falls. And the number one thing that is making this booger-eating twit wet his pants, the Republicans are going to have investigations! Like during the Clinton-Gingrich era. You know, the type of inquiries that would require Michelle Obama to be strip-searched in order to see if she's hiding the president's Kenyan birth certificate. That would surely make the new House Speaker, John Boehner, pound his gavel now, wouldn't it? I have heard this tale of woe from any number of so-called liberal talk shows from both callers and guests. And I just want to blow lunch. I don't disagree that these SS understudies wouldn't try this, but it seems the entire flipping Democratic Party peanut gallery is at a loss on how to handle this. You handle it by doing something the Democrats do best. Nothing. We have recent precedents of someone by the name of Dick Cheney getting a subpoena from Congress and then getting lost on the TV Sunday morning network pukins and never having to show up these past 2 years. Is that so hard? Tell Boehner and his company to go pound salt. Or put in the immortal words of that scholar and patriot Sharon Angle, man up, Democrats! And if Cheney happens to show up, stomp on his chest. Class dismissed. Jim, Burlingame, California. Yeah, of course. Of course. You know, I would love to be in the Democratic administration when the ghouls take over tomorrow and receive a subpoena. I don't know how many times and how fast I can type the F word in response that I would do. I don't care what position. I don't care if I was Secretary of State or the President. I would say, are you effing kidding me? You effing freaks. Get the F off my email or whatever. Go get your subpoena. Go ahead. Try to subpoena me. But the sad part of it is that, Jim is right. The Democrats in the Congress, even though this happens with alarming regularity, every time corporate America wants a new set of whores, no offense to sex workers, in the government, they just buy them. It's very simple. And from Richard, Obama has to be one of the smartest, eloquent, calm, cool, and psychologically well-balanced, think of Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, or Richard Nixon, American presidents in modern times. He's also one of the toughest, although he neither sounds it nor looks it. Shrewdly and surprisingly candidly, an aide has recently described him as, quote, the most unsentimental man I've ever met, end quote. Excuse me, ruthlessness comes easy to Obama. That's to say, which is what it took for him to beat a presidential nomination rival as tough as Hillary Clinton. And yet, his popularity is dragging down toward 40%. And by all the omens, his Democrats are about to get trounced in the November congressional election. Obama does have some serious problems, though. He's black. Unquestionably, a lot of Americans hate their national leader being black. And worse yet, a black who is the smartest man around. It's a variant incomparably uglier of the widespread loathing of John F. Kennedy for making people feel bad by being so handsome and sophisticated. Then there's the economy. Lack of jobs is serious, and perhaps even more so is a widespread insecurity among those who do have jobs. A double-dip recession is a real prospect. Yet the truth is that Obama headed off a near depression caused by Bush and corporate greed and arrogance and stupidity, and by his stimulus package brought the economy back at least to consciousness. Included in this was financial regulatory reform and reform of the auto companies is working unexpectedly well. Also, healthcare reform. Now he's attempting a second stimulus package. It's been blocked by the Republicans, who are insisting that planned tax cuts be extended to the wealthy as well as the middle class. It's a long-ass email. Hold on a second. I'll give you the rest when we come back.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Anyway, back to this message from Richard. The blockage of a second stimulus is being cheered on by the Tea Party movement. Go figure that, other than that many Tea Partiers undoubtedly can't stand the fact that Barack Obama is black. This is the point. Obama's problem, which indeed is sizable, doesn't reside in himself, although he needs to learn the art of faking sincerity that Clinton, with his "I feel your pain" pitch, was so good at. Obama's problem resides in America. It's become a near dysfunctional society. The Tea Party, which is a genuine grassroots movement, confirms it. This dysfunctional society. It stands for so-called freedom. No more big government, no more meddling people's lives, but instead, Sarah Palin. That a sizable number of people should want Palin for president is irrefutable evidence their society has gone dysfunctional. She's a third-rater, except in demagoguery and in faking sincerity. Paris Hilton would do the job as well, probably better. Why should this be so? My guess is that Tea Party members and a lot of others, including that Florida evangelical minister who wanted to burn the Quran, even though it would have put a lot of American soldiers at risk, have actually got into something important. That something is that the U.S. today is clearly in decline. This shouldn't be exaggerated. Americans have an astounding capacity for resilience. Once there was humiliation in Vietnam. Once all the experts were saying Japan was about to become number one. Both are now history. The U.S. will always be powerful and wealthy, but it will never again bestride the world like a colossus towering above all others. It will be rather a big guy in a crowd. America's conceit of so-called exceptionalism, or of being better than anyone else and fundamentally different from all other societies and countries, can no longer be sustained. It's exhausted its quota, a very large one indeed, of bright, confident mornings. Obama's problem, thus, is stark and simple. He's the right guy at the wrong time. Richard. Oh. I have been getting ever since the polls and the pundits have been clearly indicating that America ends tomorrow and the rise of American fascism becomes manifest, not just something that writers and hysterical talk show hosts have been warning about, but it really starts to take effect tomorrow. And I've been getting a lot of emails from right-wingers who are so brain-dead. Just so goddamn out of their minds. They just don't understand what they're cheering, because they're cheering. I've been getting these emails about, yeah, tomorrow you're going to find out, Malloy. Boy, ha, ha, ha. You know, once again, it's like so many of these Republicans, the Tea Partiers, and they're all the same, these right-wingers, treat these races, these congressional races or presidential contests, as that. Races, contests, football games, soccer matches, football, el football. And when their side wins, they lose. But they don't care. They don't care. They can't stand the black guy in the White House. They can't stand the better educated liberal mindset that has always seen them as bohunks. And they hate it. You know, I hear a lot of people advising intelligent liberals in this country. I realize that's redundant, but advising liberals in this country, you know, you ought to step back and realize what these poor schmucks have to deal with. You know, number one, they are living lives of quiet desperation. They are. They all are. All these right-wingers are. There's not one of them that's happy. Have you ever heard of a happy rally of right-wingers? Have you ever heard of a bunch of right-wingers getting together and having happy music and cute, interesting signs? No, they get together and they talk about, this goddamn, he's from Kenya. I'll tell you what. That's all you ever hear from these people. They really are a sorry, sad, a dysfunctional, illiterate lot. But the one thing they have going for them is, well, we'll get him out of the White House. By God, we're going to get Nancy Pelosi. The genius of Karl Rove is he nationalized elections that are going on in the backwoods of Maine or the swamps of Louisiana or the mountain towns in California. Karl Rove's genius, this son of a bitch is like a demon from hell. His genius is he managed to nationalize, you know, some jerk teabagger running for office who wouldn't know the first 10 amendments to the Constitution is called the Bill of Rights if somebody held a gun to his head. But he will tell you he's running against Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi. And he has no idea why. That's just what the Karl Rove playbook has told him to do. And so he'll win tomorrow. And then what? Well, then what? Yee-haw!
I like gypsy moths and radio talk, because it doesn't remind me of anything. I like gospel music.
He's not ready to make nice. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. I mentioned a little bit earlier the rally to restore sanity. And you know how much fun it was. There was one part towards the end, though, that where I thought John Stewart was completely wrong. I don't know why he put it the way he did it, but once again, he is a commentator who tries to find some sort of an equivalency between Fox News and MSNBC. I think MSNBC has fallen into, thanks to Oberman, he was the breach in the dam to begin with. It's fallen into a liberal point of view, primarily liberal from the standpoint of today's political atmosphere. I don't see anything that should be considered liberal when people talk about justice and honor and respect and governing the country. To me, that's just common sense. And it's a shame that that has become, but it's very telling that it has, that's become the identifying factors of liberals. They believe in getting things done and getting them done fairly, getting them done for everybody, allowing workers to organize against the predations of unbridled capitalism, on and on and on. You know, make sure there's safe food in the markets and safe drugs in the drugstores. Right? That's what liberals are about. And for some reason, these dumb bastard Republicans see that as wrong. So if that's how MSNBC is identified as being leftist and liberal, then on the other side, there is Fox News, which is a corporate propaganda machine that trades, its stock and trade is lies, deceptions, murderous lies, filth, political points of view wrapped up as a news presentation. I mean, it never stops with Fox. The only thing, you can't even trust the weather reports if you are a rational human being coming from Fox. And yet there was Jon Stewart talking about and, you know, putting up on the big jumbotrons as an example of how cable television, and this is funny to me because he's on cable television, but how cable television has destroyed the ability of Americans to make informed decisions. And I'm thinking to myself, what in the hell are you talking about? He puts up there Sean Hannity, and then he puts up Oberman. He puts up O'Reilly, and then he puts up Rachel Maddow. I mean, what the hell is going on? That's when I was very glad then that the program was over, because it was near the end. Because if that would have been at the beginning, I would have switched it off and said, screw you. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Equivalence between MSNBC and Fox. Fox is by its, I mean, its owner will tell you what they're about. And it's run by all kinds of foreign money. I mean, Fox is not an American corporation. This son of a bitch comes from other places. And who's the second biggest investor? A member of the royal family of Saudi Arabia that also funds the madrasa schools that creates terrorists. And yet people will sit there and listen to Fox and think they're getting not just the truth, but received wisdom, for Christ's sake. So a normal person can spend about 10 minutes in each one of Fox's broadcast hours, and then the normal person, he or she, is done with it, because it dawns on that normal person, Jesus Christ, this is a propaganda operation. It is run by people and employs people who truly hate the country. They're all, I mean, how many presidential candidates, for Christ's sake, work for Fox? Doesn't that tell you anything, you moronic right-wingers? How many once and future presidential candidates have programs on Fox? And how many of them are right-wingers, you stupid fools? So when Stewart gets up there and draws an equivalency, because on the left, you have an organization that is trying its damnedest to tell the truth, trying its damnedest to point out areas that require, demand justice and truth and honesty and decency and self-respect. And on the other side, you have the right-wingers who are everything but that. So there's John Stewart, who I don't know. I guess he has appointed himself as the arbiter of equivalency. He is the one who's going to stand up in front of 500,000 people on the mall, and another probably I don't know how many people watched it. Nobody will ever know, because I don't think C-SPAN 2 keeps track of numbers like that. But there he is. America's darling, where everybody under the age of 40 goes to for news, or under the age of 30 for sure, telling this vast audience of the equivalence and making the point with videotape between Fox, a propaganda neo-fascist operation on the right, and MSNBC. And I'm not talking about NBC's ownership. I know who NBC's ownership is. I know what General Electric has done. I know what these mega corporations would do as soon as the election is over tomorrow. I understand that. And NBC is now falling into the hands of Comcast. Oh, damn. But for John Stewart, of all people, you know, given a moment, his medium is television. His medium is comedy. His medium is entertainment. He had the perfect opportunity there. He said he was going to keep it apolitical. Okay, great. But the perfect opportunity presented itself for John Stewart to, rather than try to find some phony equivalency, point out the absolute difference between Fox and MSNBC. The absolute stunning difference. A difference between life and death. That MSNBC is pro-life in the broadest sense of that term. Fox News is pro-death in the broadest and narrowest sense of that term. They have commentators who exhort people to go out and commit murder. They have commentators who exhort the country to commit mass murder. Christ almighty. Well, I don't understand why teabaggers can't see. Well, I know why they can't, because they're stupid idiots. But John Stewart? Well, you know, I told Kathy, Mr. Stewart's my undying respect for him as somebody who can use comedy as an instrument of lacerations fell. He really dropped in my esteem because in an attempt to show his neutrality, I don't even know what he was trying to show. He finds this false equivalency between this hideous, vile propaganda operation that identifies itself as a news organization? Oh, Jesus God! And MSNBC. That because one speaks the truth and one lies, to Stewart, that's an equivalent attack on America's sanity. Jesus, John. Really? You really believe that? As smart as you are, as much of an entertainer and a comedian, and with all your insight and your ability to call the President of the United States, hey, dude, and all the stuff that you're capable of doing, you really don't see this enormous difference between Fox and MSNBC? Wow, John. Wow. Other than that, it was a pretty fun afternoon. Kathy in Maine writes, Mike, don't know if you know this, but Maine has a three-way race in the governor's office. And it looks like we're going to end up with a Tea Party Republican by the name of LePage. He is a hothead and totally incapable of running a state. This is happening because of an independent, Elliot Cutler, who didn't run in the Democratic primary that Libby Mitchell won. Cutler is a Democrat slash independent, and he and Mitchell are splitting the vote in the polls. I've been working my butt off making calls from a phone bank for a week. It is exhausting, and today it is not looking good for Mitchell. We are going to have a Tea Party teabagger, incompetent, running our state. And then there's the redistricting that will surely be gerrymandered in the coming year. We are screwed. Wish it were different. Kathy in Maine. Well, maybe the people of Maine will come out of the ether and realize, if Kathy's prediction comes true, that they have somebody in the governor's office who should be a greeter at Walmart.
Feels like I'm starting all over again. The last 3 years were just pretend. And I said goodbye to you.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. We're going to open the phones now. The number is 877-996-2556 if you want to join in now in the coming third hour. Kathleen writes in the subject line from Akami Pinko regarding Stewart. She writes, regarding John Stewart, I was taken aback when Stewart said that Marxists want to undermine the Constitution. Really? I consider myself a semi-Marxist, and I would bet us Akami Pinkos believe in the Constitution a hell of a lot more than the teabaggers do. Kathleen, when you look at the Constitution of the United States, and especially when you look at the amendments that were written, especially the first 10, I don't know if you want to go so far as to say they're communist. I don't mean far. I mean, I don't know if you want to use the term communist, but they're damn sure socialist. I mean, look at the 10 amendments, that everybody is equal before the law. Where the hell did that come from? You think that came out of the mind of a right winger? Oh, right. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, that comes from a right winger? The Fifth Amendment? A right not to involve oneself in self-incrimination? You think that came from a conservative? You know, every once in a while, some enterprising political science student or student of constitutional law will do that little experiment where they will creatively reword the first 10 amendments and go out and conduct surveys at malls and in public places and say, tell me if you think these ideas are good for this country or bad, or something to that effect. And then they will present the first 10 amendments, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, to people, and they might throw in the 16th or 14th or whatever, but they will present these amendments to the Constitution, without which there would have been no United States of America. And they will say to people, now, what do you think of that one? What do you think of that? And what is it? It's always what? That they only meet the approval of 35, 40, 45, 50% of the people being solicited on the street. What do you think of this one here? Do you think people should be able to gather on street corners and say anything they want to say where it concerns politics?
Well, no, I really don't.
Why not?
Well, they might say something that would cause trouble.
I mean, it's astonishing. Now, when you look at the whatever it's called when the Soviet Union was in existence, their constitution guaranteed rights to everybody. Hell, it guaranteed rights to fire plugs. I mean, everybody had rights. Everything had rights in the old Soviet Union. Now, of course, they had a style of communism, totalitarian or a dictatorial communism that was as removed from what Marx talked about as North is from South. Stalin wasn't a Marxist. He was a goddamn Hitlerite right wing. He would have been a teabagger. He was a Russian teabagger. That's how he was. And when he seized power, he eliminated the, you know, the competition, so to speak. But if you take a look, just for the hell of it, take a look at the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. Read them quietly. Don't disturb the children. Don't wake up your spouse. Just read them. And you tell me if you think that would come from the head of a right winger, of a Republican, of a teabagger. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? That's what gets me when they say, well, we got you back to the Constitution. Yeah, what part of it? The part about, I'm a strict believer in the Constitution. The part that, even though the framers said, look, you know, here's the document. We assume it's going to change and grow as the society changes and grows, but here's the starting point. Why do we want the Constitution way originally? Oh, I see. Where the only people that vote are white male landowners. Where's to say that? Women do not have the right to vote. Where's to say that? Blacks are 3/5 of a human being for the purpose of the census, but that pretty much, or representation, but that's kind of stuck. Where does it say that? You see, that's the kind, have you ever read the Federalist Papers? Have you ever just sat down and really, really read the Constitution written in that mid-18th century language? You show me a teabagger who's read the Constitution. You know, I like the fact that O'Donnell, Christine O'Donnell, this person running for the Senate in Delaware, who claims that one of her fields of study was the Constitution. And yet she sits there in the debate with her opponent and says, you really think that's in the First Amendment? Separation of church and state is in the first. And then when someone points out to her, you've got to be the dumbest ass ever to run for public office. Well, no, what I meant was the words separation of church and state are not in the First Amendment. I win! I win! Okay, let's get it on. Let's get it on, because after tomorrow night, yes, I'm getting these emails saying, you son of a bitch, you're going to go right down the tubes. You watch, after tomorrow, you left-wing N-word lovers are all going to be just removed. Woo! Okay. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. A couple of emails here, and then on to your phone calls. This is from Michelle. Subject line, John Stewart has corporate masters pulling his strings, too. And Michelle writes, that's one of the greatest tricks of the right-wing corporate noise machine. As soon as the right-wingers get caught with their pants down, lying, cheating, stealing, stepping on young women's heads, etc., they love to point back at us and scream like a five-year-old, will the liberals do it too? John Stewart may be an advocate of sanity, but he still draws a paycheck from Comedy Central, which in turn is owned by Viacom. Viacom has often been touted by right-wingers as the of the Freeper type as a, quote, Democratic, end quote, supporting cable company, but is noted for giving equally to both Democratic and Republican campaigns this season, including virulently anti-gay Republicans. Keep up the good work for what it's worth. I will be taking tomorrow off from work to do GOTV volunteering for several local and countywide Democratic candidates. If I can gain any small comfort from tomorrow's predicted bloodbath, it is to do what I can in my own backyard to help build a progressive bench for upcoming state and national elections. All politics is local, as a famous politician once said, once stated, Michelle. And this from Martin. Writes, Mike, since you've been speaking about Stewart's rally, I thought I might share with you an incident that happened at that rally involving a member of our political organization, the Workers' Party in America. Our colleague went to the rally to observe the rally and gather information for an article in the Monday edition of our news sheet. It was certainly not an affair for us, since the crowd was mostly a gathering of so-called middle-class yuppies and vacuous, unthinking so-called moderates, whose only point was to look cool and mock the idea of serious political discussion. But our colleague nonetheless mingled with participants gathering comments and information. Near the end, however, when Stewart began to speak, the tone started to turn ugly. It was not so much partisan, even though the crowd was full of can't we all just get along liberals, as it was exclusive. Stewart chose to obscenely lump Marxists, i.e. people like us, with racists and homophobes, saying we were, quote, subverting the Constitution, end quote. When our lone comrade in attendance objected to such an amalgamation and its implications, admittedly using some less than respectable language, he was not only shouted down, but also physically cornered by Stewart's little mindless minions. It took the police reminding these so-called respectable elements that the First Amendment still technically exists, and we had the right to freedom of speech, for them to back down. I think this experience demonstrates exactly what Stewart's little show was all about. It wasn't about sanity. It was about doing the same things these corporatists have done over and over again while expecting a different result. That is, insanity. Regards, Martin, Chairperson, Workers' Party in America. P.S. Stalin, a Russian teabagger. LOL. I must remember that. That's great. Yeah, well... again, my take on that, we were taking Molly and going ourselves that day to a festival. Where did we go Saturday? Where was that? Yeah, after that. Oh, that's right. Grant Park. God. Grant Park is a neighborhood, has nothing to do with Ulysses S. Grant. It's a neighborhood in southeast Atlanta, and it's where the Atlanta Zoo is. And the Grant Park Neighborhood Association, like a lot of neighborhood associations, they have, they're very active. They have lots of family activities. It's a very mixed neighborhood, black, white, gay, straight, Jew, Gentile, the whole thing, you know, atheist. Let's not forget us. We don't live in that neighborhood, but we have a lot of friends who do. So we went down into that part of Atlanta on Saturday for this parade. It's mostly kids, you know. They had some little group of about six musicians, marching band that was kind of leading the parade.
And for those of you who are curious, yes, we have pictures of Molly in the gallery in her Halloween costume.
Yeah, she was Pippi Longstocking. But... as we were getting ready to you know, getting Molly in her dress and Kathy, once again, I don't do costumes anymore. Kathy dressed up like Octomom. It was very good. A couple of years ago, she was Sarah Palin and just blew people away. I mean, Kathy can look more like Sarah Palin than Tina Fey could in her wildest imagination. Trust me. Don't you have some pictures up in the gallery of you dressed as... they are? Yeah. Kathy can do herself up a dead ringer for, I mean, just absolutely. She marched in another parade a couple of years ago and carried one of my rifles with her that, interestingly, one of the cops at the parade, this is a huge, huge neighborhood parade, I mean, enormous. It's a little five-point section of Atlanta, which is equivalent of, it's our little Greenwich Village, if you will. And had a cop come over and ask Kathy to show him that the rifle was unloaded. What? Right, right. So, but this year, I lost my train of thought. We were getting ready to go to this gig in Grant Park, and Molly's all excited. You know, she loves to march in parades. And so while Kathy's dressing her in her costume, I'm watching the Stewart thing. And it was great. I was having a great time, especially when Ozzy Osbourne came out. And the way Colbert made his entrance on the stage, I thought was creative and funny. And, you know, it was kind of interesting. I don't take an attitude. I probably should, but I don't take an attitude about what we used to call back in the 80s yuppies. You know, I just was trying to enjoy the program, more or less. But sure, I certainly understand the undercurrent. You know, Jon Stewart is part of that multimillionaire cadre of people who are supposedly the trendsetters of a sort, or definers of the culture. I guess that would be more appropriate. They define what is cool, what is hip, what is uncool, what is unhip. And it's dirty business if somebody's got to do it, right? So watching that, you know, I thought, hey, you know, we didn't have anything to do that day. I could have wasted a beautiful fall afternoon and just kicked back and watched, what was it, 2 hours, 3 hours long, whatever it was. And the part that I did see at the beginning looked like fun. You know, it looked like, hey, yeah, it would have been fun to be hanging out in the park and, you know, because I like to hang out in the park. I like to find a drum circle or somebody, you know, and you know, just kind of join in. But it started to get weird. And then we left. And we stopped at a friend's house later on in the day towards the end. And, you know, I said, quick, switch over to Sweet C-SPAN. I'm watching football, man. Please, just switch over to, just, I'm watching Georgia, Florida. Ooh, well, can I go in the other room and turn on? Yeah, go ahead. You want a beer? So I'm watching this ending part where this equivalency horse crap is coming up. And then the comments about, I don't know if he meant socialists. I mean, what the hell? What is he talking about? You know, he works for a capitalist behemoth that pays him well. He's a very talented man for, you know, for what he does. But the whole thing then just kind of tumbled into a disturbing nest of bad Halloween programming. And I just went, oh, Jesus Christ, no matter where I go. So I went back outside and went to a fire pit and sat around and listened to people drum.
Situation, girl.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Stick around. I think we might have a moment with Bob after the break. Sam is in Los Angeles, listening on KTOK. Hey, Sam.
Hey there, Mike. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. I just, I think that with the trashing of our education system, we've just lost a sense of real history. You know, in Europe, you're living in 500-year-old buildings. You're living in 700-year-old buildings. Here, there's just no anchor to true history.
Mm-hmm.
When you have someone like Jon Stewart making a parallel between...
Well, at least not for... let me interrupt. At least not for white people.
I'm sorry?
When you say there's no history here, there's a lot of history here. It's just that it doesn't belong to whites or blacks. It belongs to the people. I'm not trying to put a fine point on it, Sam, but the people who lived here before whites came and then brought in the slaves, they had a hell of a history here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm just talking about white people.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Definitely just white people. Of course, there's a very rich tapestry of history.
Yeah, I just wanted to make that point because I have a very easily irritated Hopi listener who, you know, just...
Oh, I totally agree with that.
Okay.
But when it comes to, you know, Jon Stewart or the teabaggers or, you know, these people that say that they know the Constitution or the snarky sort of, cooler than thou type thing that... You know, people are actually getting upset, and you're not supposed to get upset, or you're not supposed to be emotionally, you know, attached to what's going on in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And you go back to the revolution. I mean, the risk that they took was hanging, you know, the forefathers of this country.
Mm-hmm.
I had four generations of Scots. My grandfather and on up the line come over here and get shot down by Pinkertons and fight in the streets. And for these guys, and to me, this feeling on the street and in this country is the same as fighting for workers' rights in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And just to take to draw a parallel, for instance, between Ed Schultz and Glenn Beck, I mean, I couldn't see that at all.
Right. Yeah, Schultz has his own problems, but Glenn...
Oh, definitely.
Right, Glenn...
Definitely, but I don't see a comparison between...
No. No, of course not. Of course not.
In any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, Beck has talent.
And for Stewart and Colbert, I've kind of lost him a while ago. His snark, I just don't get it. I didn't understand his performance.
Yeah, Colbert. I hate to say it because I don't watch that program very much because I'm usually working when it's on. But I've see it. I can watch it at 1 o'clock in the morning or whatever. But I think Colbert has worked his. He's a one trick pony, and it's kind of like okay, we get it, Stephen. We get your character. We get who you're supposed to be. You can't just keep doing it over and over again. I realize he's a foil for. In a way, a foil for Stewart, but Colbert's act is just getting a little bit old. You know what I'm saying?
Well, when he went in front of Congress, it was a very uneven performance. I mean, what was he, Steve Colbert, or this foil that he's created? And
right.
He became both of them, and he does nothing but confuse people. And I don't think we need more confusion now. So I don't really understand what his aim is.
I don't either. I can appreciate to a degree a television program that Jon Stewart conducts. I think he's made some fairly acidy and salient points. But I hate to say this because I don't want to come across as some arrogant twit, but I think Jon Stewart needs to kind of stay in the role that... the universe obviously has assigned him, and that is to be a good satirist, comedian. Hey, I got to move on. Thanks, Sam. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Ben is in Allentown, PA. Hey, Ben.
Hi, Mike. You know, the more I watch of Stewart, the more of a contemptible coward he seems to become in my eyes. You know, if he wants to draw a fake equivalence between Olbermann and, say, Beck, somebody should draw an equivalence between him and Michael Wiener-Savage, because they're both using these fake last names. You know, John is really Leibovitz, but that's neither here nor there. You might recall a few years back, Stewart went on Crossfire
right.
and blew it up, made fun of Tucker Carlson.
Right.
And while I won't make any argument that Carville and Begala are corporate DLC puppets, Crossfire was the singular newscast on the air that was anti-Iraq war. Not just the liberals, but Bob Novak and even psychopaths like Pat Buchanan were saying, hey, let's not do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so once again, Stewart went on there, and he stifled the debate. And as a result, the only anti-war voice, as crazy as that sounds, was taken off the air.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been doing this for a while. Whenever he's called on his BS, he immediately retreats in this defensive position going, I'm just a comedian, but it's bogus.
Yeah.
He's a liberal mouthpiece, and Chris Hedges has a great article out today that just nails him to the wall.
I can't wait to read it. Thanks, Ben, because I'll read anything Chris Hedges writes. Thanks, Ben. I appreciate it. We have a break coming up. I think when we come back, we're going to have a moment with Bob. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Once again, it's time for A Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's episode, The Shelf Life of Monsters. Hey, Mike. Universal Studios' Reign of Terror began with the release of Dracula and Frankenstein in 1931. The following year, Boris Karloff lurched from his ancient sarcophagus in The Mummy. Soon, The Invisible Man and The Werewolf of London joined Universal's pantheon of monsters. Monsters were big box office. Horror films enabled the studio to stay afloat during the Depression years, and Universal cranked out sequel after sequel to keep moviegoers coming back for more. After three more Frankenstein films, Bride of, Son of, and Ghost of Frankenstein, some bright boy at Universal noticed a drop in ticket sales. If one monster wasn't pulling in the audience, then maybe teaming up two monsters might revive the franchise. Hence, Frankenstein meets the Wolfman. And if two monsters tearing up the screen doesn't do the trick, how about three? House of Frankenstein added Dracula to the monster mix, and a year later, the terror trio of Dracula, the Wolfman, and Frankenstein's monster were reunited in The House of Dracula. For over 14 years, Universal Studios milked the horror genre for all it was worth. The monsters that terrified filmgoers during the Depression had, by the end of World War II, lost their scary movie mojo. What could the studio do to get the last penny out of their Resident Evils? If they couldn't use the monsters to scare the audience, then they'd play them for laughs. In Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, the horror cycle was officially over, but there was still one more way to cash in on the monsters. Television. In the 50s, Universal unloaded their library of horror films to independent television stations eager for cheap programming, and the baby boom generation discovered for themselves the monsters. At 10:30 every Saturday night, I'd be sitting way too close to our zenith, black and white television for KTNT's Nightmare. For the next hour and a half until the station signed off for the night, I learned everything I needed to know about the monsters. To protect yourself, you needed garlic, wolfbane, holy water, crucifixes, wooden stakes, silver bullets, and whatever you do, don't let the mummy get at the brew made from tanna leaves during the full moon. If you couldn't dispatch the fiends during the dead of night, the next best protection from werewolves and vampires was daylight. Lawrence Talbot would change back into human form with the sunrise, and if touched by the light of dawn, Dracula would turn to dust. You were safe from the worst of the monsters during the day. Regardless of what time of day it was, you could always avoid the staggering Frankenstein monster or the foot-dragging mummy by simply walking faster. You don't At the time, I was told by my parents and the nuns at school that watching that junk would turn my brain to mush, and it wasn't healthy to be fascinated with the macabre. Well, anyone who spent as much time as I did glued to the screen watching that junk knows more about how to deal with Republicans than all the reporters and pundits of mainstream media and the entire leadership of the Democratic Party combined. You don't negotiate with monsters. You don't make deals with vampires. You don't reach across the aisle to create bipartisanship with the undead. All vampires want to do is rip your throat open and drink your blood. Werewolves were driven to tear you to pieces. If you're standing between the mummy and a bubbling cauldron of Tana leaves, he's going to rip you in half like a phone book. The only way to appease these guys is to kill yourself before they get their hands on you. Nope. There's only one way to deal with monsters. They have to be dragged out of their coffins, their grotesque laboratories, and all the dark corners where the ghouls nest to be brought smoking and howling into broad daylight. That's what the villagers did in the movies. But we don't do that. I don't think enough Americans learned anything from Universal Studios horror films. Too bad for us. If you've never seen the movies, you don't know beans about accountability. We don't know who murdered John Kennedy. It's up for grabs who really pulled off 9/11. All we really know for certain is the official government story doesn't wash. But the criminals that made up the cabal that plotted and succeeded in overthrowing our government are well known to us, and we have done nothing to bring them to justice. 10 years ago, the Supreme Court of the United States broke all the laws they needed in order to steal the election for George W. Bush. As Vincent Bugliosi wrote in None Dare Call It Treason, quote, "The stark reality, and I say this with every fiber of my being, is that the institution Americans trust the most to protect its freedoms and principles committed one of the biggest and most serious crimes this nation has ever seen, pure and simple, the theft of the presidency. And by definition, the perpetrators of this crime have to be denominated criminals." End quote. Everyone who understands Bugliosi's words know that the day the Supreme Court handed the presidency to Bush was the last day this country existed as we understood it. For all intents and purposes, the United States of America was over. The mega criminals took over 10 years ago. They haven't gone anywhere, and they're not done stealing every last dime out of us that they can. We did not boil out into the streets and demand justice, so we didn't get any. Bush's successor, the current corporate stooge running the country, made it clear that he was not going to demand accountability and drag those swine into a courtroom ever. Since we have not held the Republican criminals accountable, they're coming back. Fueled by corporate money is speech financing courtesy of the Supreme Court, rigged voting machines, and the 24/7 Fox News fertilizer spreader, we're likely to see in a few days the Republican monster machine come roaring back into town. Sarah Palin and Rudy Giuliani have endorsed an honest-to-God war criminal for North Carolina's 7th Congressional District. Ilario Pantano killed 2 unarmed Iraqis while serving in Iraq. Pantano shot the men repeatedly after stopping their vehicle at a checkpoint. He admitted to emptying 1 magazine of bullets into the Iraqis, then reloaded and fired 30 more rounds into the dead men. He then hung a sign over their corpses that read, "No better friend, no worse enemy." Despite his admission, the military cleared Pantano of wrongdoing in 2005. This guy's scarier than the entire cast of House of Frankenstein. He's real. Tomorrow, get ready for Monster Mash 2010. With the moon riding high and the wind in the trees, see the newly elected creatures lurching out of their graves and shamble toward our nation's capital. They're back. Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. He had a couple of quotes in that piece that I had to eliminate for time, but his writing far exceeds the person he quoted, so All right. They're back. Nora is in Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hello, Nora.
Hi there, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
It's been a while. You probably didn't hear that a couple months ago Tom Hartman said, God bless Mike and Kathy Malloy for all these years saying that George Bush, the Bush crime family. Anyway.
No, I guess I missed that.
I thought it was funny because you don't believe in God, right? And he said, God bless you.
Oh, yeah. That's a real knee slapper.
So anyway, I'm calling about a couple things.
Okay.
One is about the movie Trudell, the documentary. It's on this week, Wednesday at 5 p.m. on the documentary channel.
What is it again, Trudeau?
Trudell. It's a documentary about John Trudell. T-R-U.
Hello?
Hello.
Wait, hold on a second. What, I think we, I think the phones. I just lost Nora. We having problems with the phone system again? Of course. All right, Nora, if you're still listening, I'm sorry. Our wonderful phone system here that is held together with. I just wish I had the tax money that Glenn Beck paid to the hated government every year. We could afford to get some new equipment, right? I'm sorry, Nora. I don't know what happened to your phone call, but probably it was our fault. All right, quick email. We got a second here. This is from Jen. Mike, one thing about teabaggers I learned after dealing with one who was a friend of mine in college and since lost her mind, they believe the First Amendment gave them freedom to worship, not a separation of church and state. They actually believe our founding fathers were making sure everyone could worship and not be denied that right. We got into this huge debate a few weeks back when the O'Donnell separation of church and state thing came up. I explained, no, the Constitution is giving us the freedom from a state religion. She was like, no, no, it means we have the right to religion, and religion's important for this country. The founders wrote under God in the pledge. I almost lost my drink when she said that. I then explained that the pledge was written in the 1800s, not the 1700s, and the words under God did not appear until 1954. Goddess, I hope we don't see any of these teabaggers in office. My fear is we will. Jen. About 10 before the hour. A couple more emails here. This is from Janine. Mike, I have to say that I too was offended by John Stewart's long speech comparing enlightened minds with brain dead teabagging Republicans. But the reason I'm sending this message is that I was watching a countdown in Keith Olbermann tonight, and he was saying that he was suspending, or maybe one day ending, worst persons in the world. He claimed it's because of the segment John Stewart had drawing comparisons between liberal and corporate media punditry. I'm willing to bet, however, it's because Comcast, who's in bed with Rupert Murdoch, is wielding its iron hand on Olbermann, since the majority of the time Fox talking heads and Rush Limbaugh are regularly making worst persons in the world almost every night. And we know what happens to those who trash talk Fox noise talking heads. It's a shame, since that always was my favorite part of the show. And I would especially miss it when Keith has a substitute host on his program. Regards, Janine. Oh, I didn't know that. He's going to suspend worst persons in the world. I usually like that, too. It's gone? Hmm. My, my. Brian in Spokane, Washington writes, Mike, I'm pretty sick of Jon Stewart ripping on Maddow and Oberman, too. Once he did get Oberman to admit his rhetoric had become a little too heated. But otherwise, I wonder if Stewart really believes his own criticism of MSNBC's commentators as though they were equivalent to Fox. Anyone remember how MSNBC became the liberal network? They clearly weren't for a while. Heck, they took Donahue's show off the air at the beginning of the Iraq War because all the other networks were beating the war drums, despite the fact that his ratings were very good. MSNBC's lean toward the left came about because they realized a void was waiting to be filled for liberal outrage. Almost as a fluke, Oberman led the charge, even though his show was not a strictly political one. Before this was hardly any liberal outrage anywhere in the mainstream media, yet all over talk radio, on Fox and other cable news shows, the extreme right talkers were all over the place. So, what does Jon Stewart think? That this void shouldn't have been filled? Or that it's okay? Or that it's never okay to be outraged? Even over the most horrifying crime one can possibly commit? War? How about a war we were lied into on purpose, Jon? Unfortunately, Jon also creates a false equivalency between Code Pink and the Tea Party. Code Pink, who are outraged over threats that Jon also creates false equivalency between Code Pink and the Tea Party, who are outraged over threats that don't exist. The Afghanistan and Iraq wars are very real, and we can't all just deal with them by joking around. I do like Jon Stewart for the most part. I hope he comes up with his own cable news network so we can see what he thinks would be an ideal news network. One thing I can agree with is that there should be more investigative reporting and less commentary than there is out there right now. But we do need someone to fight the likes of Fox News haters on the air. Brian in Spokane. Nora's back. Hey, Nora.
Hey, you lost me and I'm back.
You're back.
So I was saying about this movie, Trudell, you know, it was created by, the executive producer was Angelina Jolie's mother, the last thing she did before she died of ovarian cancer.
Uh-huh.
You know who John Trudell is, right?
I think somebody sent me an email about it, but frankly, no, I don't.
He has a MySpace poetry blog, and he has a lot of CDs, and
yeah.
His family was killed when he burned a flag on the steps of the FBI in 79, and then that night his whole family was burnt to death, et cetera, et cetera.
Good Lord.
An American Indian Movement leader, formerly. But that's the movie that's on 5 p.m. this week. But also, there's this other issue. Mumia Abu-Jamal, who originally Tom Ridge had signed a death penalty for him in 1995,
mm-hmm.
and then in 2001 the death penalty was removed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a week from tomorrow, November 7th, or whatever date that is,
mm-hmm.
November
9th.
9th, Mumia Abu-Jamal case is going before the Third Circuit Court in Philadelphia to reapply the death penalty. And supposedly as many people as possibly can go there to Philadelphia would help convince them to not do so.
I would hope that Mumia Abdul-Jabbar has good legal representation, because if there's one thing that I don't think has ever worked in this country is protests where the object of the protest is a court. I don't know how it is in this particular court in Pennsylvania, but certain justices are appointed and confirmed. They're lifetime appointments. I know a lot of state court judges have to run for office.
This is the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, the federal court.
It's a federal court. Those guys are signed for life, I believe, which means...
But apparently it would help to get more media, at least.
Well, yeah, but that story is one that mainstream media refuses to touch and has refused to touch for, you know, for 15 years. They just stay completely away from it. So
how about this crazy election here? I have two good friends that are running for governor, one for the grassroots party, one for the Ecology Democracy Party, which he's creating.
Yeah.
And I can't vote for either one of them because I'm so terrified of Emmer. And we're working on getting instant runoff voting in the future.
Oh,
I'm going to be yelling at Dayton tomorrow night,
the
new governor of Minnesota, how much we need instant runoff voting.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be watching all that tomorrow night, Nora. Hey, thanks for tuning in. I appreciate it. Sorry about the phone screw up there earlier. Yeah, we'll be on tomorrow night, 9 to midnight Eastern, as usual. And it'll be mostly coverage of the end of representative government. Well, that ended on December 12th, 2000, but you know what I'm talking about. So I'll see you tomorrow night, all right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Why are so